But there's going to be a time in the middle of your life where you're probably going to say, do I want to continue to do what I've been doing when I have another 25, 30 years of work ahead of me? Or have I been living someone else's dream and I have decades to go? So I think we need to support people in recognizing it's not a crisis if it's something that we respect and actually anticipate.
Welcome to Zestful Aging, where I speak with fascinating people from all over the world, from every walk of life, who will inspire you to live with zest. I'm your host, Nicole Christina, and my mission is to bring you optimism about aging and help you make full use of the new opportunities that only come at this stage of life. To find out more about the podcast, hop on over to zestfulaging.com. And while you're there, sign up for my weekly email newsletter, The Insider, where you will get fun and quirky tidbits about the show and my exploits, including when I went python hunting in Florida and my participation in the National Senior Games. And if you love the podcast, I'd be grateful if you shared it with your friends. Our music is courtesy of Judy Banker, who was a previous guest on the show. Find out more at judybanker.com. And our technical director is Stephen Littweiler. Well, what do you call that murky in-between time between the ages of 45 and 65? Well, what if that time had its own name and we could understand it as a specific phase with its specific joys, expectations, and challenges? Well, today's guest wants to rebrand this phase and start a midlife revolution. Her name for it is Middlescence. Today, gerontologist and life stage expert Barbara Waxman is going to share some of her insights that will turn everything you think about the future of aging and longevity in the 21st century on its head. It's going to be fun. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Thanks for having me.
We are going to have a lot of fun, a lot of things to talk about. You're an active and busy woman, so we have to kind of focus it down a little bit. And I guess the first thing that I'm really interested in is this idea of middlescence, why you came up with this name and what the whole concept is.
That's a great place to start. After 20 years of working as a gerontologist and coach, I took a gap year, in fact. I was still working, but my husband and I realized it was wasted on the young and that we wanted to take some time in our 50s to really get perspective on our lives. And so I looked at the qualitative and quantitative data that I had found through 20 years, but never really had the time or space to go through and conceptualize to learn from. And when I did, I recognized that those 30 years that most of the listeners, and in fact, it's a global kind of number, those 30 years we've added to life expectancy over the course of the last century aren't lived and experienced as old, decrepit years at the end, even though people think, oh, I'm older longer. In fact, those years are showing up and widening the midsection of our lives, and it's uncomfortable and people don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I recognized that the stage that we've added, and it is a new life stage that people experience, has a commonality with adolescence, which was only made up or created in 1904 by a psychologist, in fact, named Stanley Hall. Mm-hmm. Stanley Hall recognized, for a variety of reasons, I won't go into the history of it, but hormones change, bodies morph, relationships shift, mm-hmm. and kids feel like, I'm not a little kid, but I'm not a grown-up. Who am I? Well, in this midsection, what happens? Hormones change, bodies morph, although admittedly, this time, not necessarily in ways we always love, there are more relationship transitions in midlife, including caregiving, becoming an empty nester, divorce, falling in love for the first time, the second or third time, re-careering. And then again, this sense that, well, I'm not young anymore, but I'm not old. So I recognized we needed to name it, because you, I'm sure, as a therapist, know if you can name something, you can tame it. And so I started referring to the stage as middle essence.
I see. And does this resonate with people when you talk about middle essence? Is there this like, oh, yeah, that's what's going on?
It's been incredible. In fact, last week I was in Phoenix speaking to 1,200 women leaders from North America who are across a variety of communities all over, and they're trying to figure out, how do we start to really create programming and business opportunities for women in midlife? We've always focused this organization on younger folks. And the terminology ignited something in so many of them. They left, and the ideas, I'm on a variety of email chains. It's very exciting when you give people an opportunity to work with something that's existed, but in a new way, magic happens.
So would you say this idea of middle essence is the opposite of a midlife crisis? Or is it just different?
There is a myth of the midlife crisis. In fact, the midlife crisis was created, all the ideas are named or created by someone, by a 47-year-old white male who was, experiencing some of these things. And what happened was, it came to be around the same time historically that in the United States, there was this expression, don't trust anyone over 30. It was when baby boomers were in their teens, 20s, and they started saying, you know, youth is where it's at. So that was happening. Mid-career people were starting to feel like, well, then what does that mean for me? And so this myth took on, really, because the advertising industry saw, aha.
I was thinking that. Yep.
Totally. Fear sells, right? Mm-hmm. So that idea took off. But in fact, when you think about it, what would life be like if we supported middle essence, like we support adolescence and say, huh, we don't know exactly what age, just like adolescence varies, but there's going to be a time in the middle of your life where you're probably going to say, do I want to continue to do what I've been doing when I have another 25, 30 years of work ahead of me? Mm-hmm. Or have I been living someone else's dream and I have decades to go? So I think we need to support people in recognizing it's not a crisis if it's something that we respect and actually anticipate.
It's a total reframing. And I'm just thinking about how important a name is, right? A weed or a perennial. I mean, so, you know, some weeds could be also flowers. And to say, I really want to give some thought to my middle essence has a very different feel than, well, I guess I'm in a midlife crisis. It's so, I mean, I would think the approach and the optimism or lack of, it's a total game changer.
It's a total game changer. So just yesterday I was at an event and I was introduced, I was speaking, and people asked, they wanted to know more of my story. And so my current story right now is I just turned 60. I just became a nana, a grandmother. Mm-hmm. And I'm launching, they'd asked about what I'm doing, workshop in Baja, speaking on, thankfully, multiple podcasts like yours. They're saying, what? That doesn't compute. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're just getting going. Mm-hmm. And I said, I am. I recently took a fairly detailed analysis questionnaire, a longevity quiz. And according to that, I have 4 decades, if I'm 60 now, 4 decades of adulthood. Mm-hmm. And if I focus on my health span, not my lifespan, but my health span, right? Then I'm hoping for 25, 30 years to be continuing to be actively engaged in the work I feel is important and I love. So it is a complete reframing, and it's a real opportunity because the world needs our wisdom, our experience, our empathy, our listening skills more than ever.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, are you familiar with this theory that's, even though I've been doing this for a while, was new to me? And the idea that since we're not fertile anymore and we're not making babies, that creative energy has to go somewhere. And if there wasn't a purpose for it, nature would have kind of culled people like you and I at this age. Have you heard about this idea that we have this innate creative energy that's just looking for a place to land?
That is, you know, no one's asked me that question before. And I think even by experience, I have heard about it. And I know it to be true, not just in terms of creativity, because the creativity goes along with a freedom that we don't care as much what other people think. And I think some of that is hormonal. There's a shedding of a sense of weightedness and responsibility that creates an opportunity to say, this is my time. I'm going to learn. I have more people saying to me, how do I say no? Because I'm ready to start saying it. Give me the tools, give me the skills. And because they don't care so much how people think, but they don't know how to show up differently. So I think people are way more creative because they don't care so much. It's not that they weren't creative in the past. It's that it was buried in a way that they're ready to uncover.
I felt that too as the podcast becomes more and more successful and I'm meeting with, you know, leaders like yourself. It just feels, it's almost like an intoxication of freedom. It's like, why wouldn't I contact this person? Why wouldn't I do a proposal for a radio show? Why would, I mean, it just doesn't make sense that I would stop myself. And there's something that feels very natural about it, as if like, you know, a flower is blooming. I'm using a lot of plant analogies today, but you know, you're not, it really does feel like exactly in sync with my age and stage.
So since you're using the flower analogy, let me offer listeners sort of one way to conceptualize and work with this new stage and idea. And I call it repotting. If you think, and I am a gardener, so that was perfect.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
If you think that we're all growing in our pots, those are the homes we live in, the communities we live in. And at some point or points, our roots are ready to break out. But if you've ever done any kind of planting, you know you need to lift the roots out carefully and plant them in new soil so they could spread. And I don't mean that means moving your home or moving to a new location, though people are certainly doing that. What I mean is psychically, and that's what I did with my husband during this gap year. We, even though we were still working part-time, but we considered it a gap year because we picked our roots up, we planted ourselves in another country, in a different pot, so we could get away, get perspective, water ourselves with the culture and the language, and new ways of thinking. So I want to encourage people, it could be a 2-week repotting, but it is different from a vacation. It's an intentional time where you don't take a time out. I call it taking a time in. And you do want to go somewhere different so you get out of the patterns where you are and start to think about, wow, if my roots could grow, if I was willing to take risks, you don't have to do it. Just ask yourself the questions. What's a dream that I used to have that I never thought I would pick up again? What's something on my list that I keep saying I'm going to do or undo that I'm ready to actually take on or let go of? So this repotting analogy, thank you for bringing up the plants, is a tool that people can use to create some dynamic, creative change in their lives.
Hi, everyone. You may have noticed that Zestful Aging Podcast does not run a lot of ads. That's because I'm just not willing to endorse products that I don't have total confidence in and that I don't use myself. So it really means something when I tell you that after I interviewed Dr. Bill Rawls on cellular health, read his books, and learned about his high standards for quality control, I was sold. I placed an order for Vital Plant supplements immediately. I encourage you to check out both of my interviews with Dr. Bill Rawls and hop on over to vitalplan.com. If you enter Zestful15, they will give you a 15% off of your first order. I'm really excited for you to try these products. I think you'll be very impressed. Now, back to the show. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, and I've talked about this on several episodes, is I have clients who come in and they say, okay, what's next? You know, my kids have launched, I'm wrapping up my career, I may or may not be staying with my partner. And then they say, but I don't know, what do I do next? And there's a paralysis. And I think what happens is there's this sense of like, it's scary and I don't want to be scared. And so this idea of repotting, I think for some people comes with some trepidation.
Absolutely. So many of us are at a place in our lives where something's got to change. So part of it is overwhelm. Which is it, door number one, door number two? Which change is the change I want to make? Mm-hmm. The first thing I'll say, and it's interesting, in January, my newsletter that goes out once a month, we're going to be talking about what I consider to be the comfort crisis. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with COVID, because what's happened is during COVID, we have hunkered down. We've had to, right? And so first, we didn't know what to do. We couldn't go out. We didn't understand it. Then we realized people were burning out and it was frightening. So we were teaching ourselves to practice more self-care to get through it. But as we hunkered down and practiced more self-care so we could survive, if not thrive, hopefully thrive, we've gotten so comfortable that people have more fear sometimes of breaking through because they feel like I've been through enough. Mm-hmm. So fear is not a bad thing. It's just, I'll associate it with stress. There's stress, and we think stress is bad, but stress isn't all bad. There's eustress, E-U, like a eulogy when you say good things about people, typically after they go. But eustress, and then there's at the other end of the spectrum, distress. So we want some stress, otherwise we'd be like a wet noodle, right? Mm-hmm. It gets us up in the morning. You're in flow when you're focused and paying attention because you're working hard at something. That's a certain kind of stress. So I think people need to find the challenge that is going to take them outside of their comfort zone so they could find what I call the magic on the other side of the moat, which has to do with the gremlins that keep us safe in our comfort zones. Mm-hmm. I could talk a little bit about that. It's another tool.
I think that there's also this assumption that, okay, now I'm ready and it somehow should be easy. Mm-hmm. And I it's still scary. I've made decisions to, one of them was to go python hunting with a woman in Florida.
Wow.
That's not everybody's cup of tea, but the feedback was like, are you crazy? I'm not crazy. I wasn't going to handle them. She's an expert. She's an environmentalist. I'm just going along to watch.
That's amazing.
It's still a little scary. But is that going to hold me back from doing something that is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? So I think maybe, I don't know, what your experience says about this, but adjusting and adapting and getting out of your comfort zone is a risk.
It's a risk, and there's a reason we're in our comfort zones. It keeps us safe. It says our comfort, our gremlins, I'll go back to the gremlins because I think it really answers your question. We have these naysayers on our shoulder. A python, are you kidding me? You know, what are you doing? So I'm sure you went through this analysis. Huh, is it the good kind of crazy or is it the crazy kind of crazy? And you know, which do I want? And that's your gremlin talking to you. They are meant to keep us safe. Gremlins will say, don't get fired. Don't embarrass yourself or your family. Mm. You know, all don't do this. You could lose a friend. You could, all kinds of things. So actually know that those messengers that we all hear, but we all hear distinct messages, are there to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. Imagine we're each a beautiful castle surrounded by this moat I mentioned before, and these gremlins are at the corner, and we know that magic, that python hunting, mm-hmm. we have to cross the moat to get there. Mm-hmm. So yes, the magic happens there. So if you're a little bit scared, if something's kind of frightening, do it. Find out your risk assessment, go mm-hmm. through that. Is it my comfort zone? Yes, I want to push past it. It's going to be uncomfortable. I could fail. The other beautiful thing about being a middlescent is that we know we've lived long enough to fail, to go through most of us loss and heartache, mm-hmm. for some of us serious illness, and we've survived mm-hmm. and we'll survive again. So I think people need to reach in to that history of experience to and understand. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Exactly. Resilience, that you can do it. 2023, let it be the year of courage.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. You also have, well, you have this construct, the five essential elements. I was really interested about this thing you call your most valuable currency. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Sure. My whole coaching model is called Entrepreneurship Turned Inward, ETI. And the reason I use that is because I know that mindset is everything. And the American way in particular, more than internationally in this case, is that entrepreneurs, new business endeavors are creative, they solve problems, and so they're sexy and people want to invest in them. So I turn that on its head and I say, what about taking care of the business of your life? And so think of yourself as the product, as the business. And then what are the currencies that are going to be used and that you need to launch? So that's kind of the frame. And the currencies are your intrapersonal currency. That's your resilience, which I'll get into with the five essential elements. Your interpersonal currency, that's your social currency. That's your networking, your relationships. Who adds to your bank account, your social bank account? Who detracts and therefore should be withdrawn from it? Mm-hmm. Those are some important questions to ask. And then universal energy, being in nature, right? It has been found to lower blood pressure, make people healthier in just about every way. So part of my work is to say, yes, if we're going to have aspirational, we're going to live longer and increase our health spans, then I also want to give people the tools to have the energy and the resilience to live those lives. So I developed, using ancient wisdom, frankly, and the newest technologies, to come up with the five essential elements, which I can tell you about if you want me to.
Sure,
kind of.
Sure, of course.
So, and by the way, on my website, which I can give later, there's a free self-assessment. So people can go on and get their energy status from there.
Excellent. So,
and it's only 25 questions, which are all backed by research. And the first five have to do with nutrition and exercise, which is the most foundational part. We are what we eat. We have to move. We are physical beings and spiritual beings. So I mentioned to you before the call, I'd say my biggest, best piece of advice for people in this area is to move every day, whether it's playing music and getting in front of a mirror, feel great about it and you'll want to do more. And when it comes to food, eat to fuel yourself and to bring yourself joy and be intentional about it. And here I go to Dan Buettner's work, The Blue Zones. He's written some great books. And in one of them, the biggest takeaway was when he visited this community in Japan. And he would notice not the younger people, but the older people would sit before they ate and quietly say something to themselves. So he asked what they were saying. And they would take an intentional moment. He thought it was a prayer. And I guess it's a prayer of sorts. They would simply say, Hara Hachi Bu. Hara Hachi Bu. And what that means, more or less in the translation, is eat until I'm 80% full. Mm-hmm. Eat until it will suffice. That's all. So it's an intentionality. So that is the most foundational, nutrition and exercise. The next, also extremely foundational, underrated part is rest and renewal. Mm-hmm. As we age, we don't lose our memory. Our minds are more crowded. We've been on the planet. Most of us are in the intellectual property business. We're not out there as gardeners full-time tilling soil. So we need to rest so literally our minds can clear through sleep, can work things out. We need to renew ourselves so we stay really crisp. The third area I call joy and passion, because let's face it, when people say, what's your purpose? That gets people really stuck sometimes. I don't know. I'm not so Mother big. Teresa.
Yeah.
Right? So I break it down into big P purpose. Mine and yours, having the podcast, is spreading the news, changing people's mindsets and lives one day at a time by sharing information, right? So we're lucky, in fact, that we know our big P purpose. But I also need to know my little P purpose. What brings me joy every day? Mm-hmm. What's one small thing I can do every day, whether it's call someone I think may be lonely, who doesn't even know me very well? What can I do to bring me joy? I can go work in my garden. So the questions ask about joy and passion, and that gets you to purpose. So that's a third area. The fourth is focus and growth. The more we can be attuned to continue to expose ourselves to ideas like, oh, midlife isn't a crisis. There's something called middlescence. How can I activate that? How can I use it to grow? We're going to be healthier for it. And then finally, a lot of people will hire me to say, I hear you do a lot of work with time management. I lead a company. I need to work on time management. And I'll say, I'm not the right person because we can't manage time. In fact, Einstein showed us time warps. Time is time. Mm. All we can do is manage the energy we have in the time available and associate distinct tasks when we know ourselves well enough to know when our energy for that task is best. So that those five areas kind of make up what enables people to have their mojo, for lack of a better term.
And there's a strategy and a consciousness about this and an awareness. And it's funny, I had a guest ask me if we could, it was probably someone like in Australia or something, can we meet at 6 p.m.? And I thought, that's not going to go well. You're not going to get a lot of great questions because I know by then I've
exactly.
had it. And so, I mean, I don't know if I've thought it through as carefully as you're suggesting we do, but you know, when you get to be this age, you do know, for me, it's better to hike the dogs in the morning because as the day gets away from me, I have a lot of other things that distract me. And I guess you learn from your experience and then hopefully you can start doing this more consciously.
And it's not rocket science. That's the thing. It's just like anything else, the simplest things are the most complex things at the same time, right? When we think about DNA sequencing, it's simple sequencing, but it's the most complicated thing of all. Cells, how we manage ourselves, So I try to take complexity and simplify it for people. So as I see it as a coach, it is not a forever engagement. I give people tools. I help them learn to listen to themselves through the conversations where I feed back questions to elicit their truths, not mine. And it's amazing how people feel, and they'll share with me, like they're coming home to themselves, like somewhere they lost themselves from the busyness. And this is all over the globe. I have clients in Europe and South America and everywhere. People are becoming, there's an epidemic of busyness. Not United States, we're a leader of the pack, not in a way that we, you know, aspire to be, but it's such a joy to help people come to the best of who they are, because I go back to, I do this because the world needs us more than ever. We have more resources. We've got more time, actually, and we've got more experience. And then when we connect it, I say every person should have a wise elder on their team and a wise younger. Mm-hmm. We need to connect generations. Mm-hmm. We've lost some of that. And it is happening again. So it's in very exciting ways, in fact.
There's so much you have that you're doing, that you're offering, your connections with Stanford. You have so yes. much going on. Is it hard for you to say, I'm so excited. I'm just feeling this joy. I need to take a nap and not, you know, go out for my business dinner or whatever. Do you have to kind of sometimes reel yourself in?
100%, because you're right. I have a friend, my friend Lisa, and I walk every week, and she is a theme of the week person. What's her theme this week? And I am someone who loves to, I have a color-coded rainbow. I call it my rainbow. Color-coded calendar where green is work, orange is personal growth and volunteering, red is social connections, blue is home, I could go on. And my calendar reflects the totality that I love to live every part of the rainbow most days. So one thing I'm actually changing in 2023, because now becoming a grandmother, my 8 weeks ago, my first grandchild, Jacob, was born.
Oh my gosh.
And in 4 weeks, now my daughter's due with her first, and I'm fortunate they live near me, and they're saying, Mom, how do we get on your calendar?
color are we going to be?
What color are we in? Can we get on there? So I'm trying to think, to your excellent question, what's the energy I have? What do I need to shift to be who I want to be, adding a new role again? So I'm going to be shifting how I do my work calendar. So that's one thing. I do recommend color-coded calendars if people want to feel aligned with, when I say to people, the way you spend your time, is it aligned with what you say is important? And a good way to do that, because time tracking is so tedious by the minute, but if you color code, and many calendars allow you to do that, you can get a general sense of that. So that's one thing, and I am going to change some of that. The other thing is, I believe in power naps. Mm. Oftentimes, and the research, I believe in it, the research shows it. Oftentimes, I have this beautiful chaise lounge in my office, and it will be between 8 and about 12 minutes. I will lie down, I'll put my phone timer on, and I will deeply rest. It is not a power nap to fall asleep. It is to get yourself in the zone. Being a regular meditator helps, but I'm not meditating then, because I'm truly, you know, when you're not fully asleep, but you're deeply resting.
It's like Shavasana.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. It's that just stage of breathing and letting yourself go. And typically before the timer goes off, I will get up to think, this must have been enough time. I better check the timer. Maybe it's not working. And it's not, it's just that I get this, you just have to practice doing it, but I'm clear. So yes, managing the energy you have and the time available. Like you, I'm a morning person. So I get up, I work in 90-minute increments, I do 90 minutes, and then I exercise. Then I'm back at my desk, then I take a short break. So people need to think about what really works for them and track how they feel. And I'm with you. I was asked to do a podcast at 9 o'clock at night, and I don't know if they'd be happy with it.
Oh, goodness. You know, it's interesting, too, because I don't do it as precisely as you do, but I have got to get outside. I mean, I'm in upstate New York, and it's not always lovely. It's often freezing rain, but the dogs really help me get out there. And I have never said, I wish I didn't hike the dogs today. You know, it's foundational, and there's certain things that have to happen, and the rest kind of fall into place. But I know that if I take on more clients or more podcasts than I have energy for, I'm not that fun to be around. I feel tense and you know, grumpy.
Mm-hmm. What's your best tool in your toolkit for saying no?
I don't have that much trouble with it because, like, I'm a big tennis player and I have to play tennis certain times a week, or I'm resentful, I think. It's so important to me, and it's my people, it's exercise, it's social, it's intermittent. And there's so many boxes for it. So I think that I just know myself that if I take more than a certain amount of clients, I'm not good to anyone. I can't stretch myself enough and fake it that it's fine, because it's not fine. And I really feel like my bone marrow is getting sucked out of me. It's not pleasant for me. And I don't think I'm as useful for the people that I'm, you know, serving.
So you've said a number of important things, but two critical takeaways for listeners, I think, is one, you are somatically, so from a physical body perspective, in touch with yourself. People need to stay in touch with their feelings physically and emotionally. And so many of us think, oh no, I'm not feeling that way because I have to do this or I have to do that. So number one, you're in touch with yourself. Number two, you know what you care about, and most of us do. When we really sit with it and we're in a safe space, and then we ask, here's what is most important to me. And when you have a strong yes, it gives you the ability to say no that doesn't feel so difficult. So for you, you're saying, I guess it's not so hard. If you weren't so clear about what you cared about, it would be a different story. So again, those are two great tips you just shared.
I want to add in something. As a clinical social worker, I have the privilege of saying I don't have to take on as many clients as I possibly can to pay the rent. So that's another piece of it that I'm aware. I'm very privileged that, you know, in the long haul, it doesn't make that much difference. And I'm very fortunate in that. But yes, I think that's something I've learned and, as you say, been much more clear about, like, you know, I haven't eaten, I feel crummy. I had a friend who was a therapist who said, if I take too many clients on, I spend that much money and more in services to get me back into decent shape. I start ordering out food. I start, you know, buying myself more treats. I start doing all these things because I'm cranky and depleted. I might as well just have seen less clients and, you know, save all of that, you know, complication.
Absolutely. No, that's a really good point. Really good point. And some of it goes back to mindset. And you bring up this identity, issues about capacity. Some of us don't have the choice. So if people don't have the choice and they say, well, I have to take on more work. And I've been at periods in my life when I've done that. When I was raising my kids and working more than I wanted to work. Then you need to double down on the kind of self-care that gets you back. We call it on the mat. You know, it's as though you're in a yoga pose and you don't want to fall off the mat as quickly as possible. And for many of us, that means being extremely attentive to getting enough sleep And sometimes that means if I can't get it all at night because it ends up being too late, I have to get to work early. It's whether it's in a bus or and just saying, all right, I'm just going to close my eyes and deeply relax for a while, or whether it's in an office. I've gone to meetings where I have gone into a bathroom and I'll just take a few minutes and sit there and just breathe and have a few moments to myself because I'm also not an extrovert all the time. So again, I'm finding in midlife, people are more creative about ways because they know themselves better. Things they need and ways in which they can help themselves once they take the time to actually figure out what it is they need. They get the clarity.
That's where you come in and help them understand that. You know, I had a thought, and this is kind of a psychotherapist kind of thought, but to give yourself that rest is not only physiologically helpful to kind of recharge your batteries, but I think it gives us a message that I deserve this, I'm valuable, and this is important. It's kind of a double message to me. It's a two-pronged thing that builds in this idea of deep self-love and deep self-compassion.
I completely agree. And they're flip sides of the same coin, which are, I am worthy, and I am deeply worthy and deserve extreme self-care, as you're saying. And then for people who just can't get comfortable with that, and there are. And so I always say to people, let's work with what we've got. I say, how can you be of service? If oftentimes those people feel like, no, I have to be of service. And I'll say, okay, what are the elements that are present when you are your best self in service? And they come back and they end up at the same place. But when they do, when they take care of themselves with a mindset that it helps them be of service, it's more palatable. And I say, that's okay. It's let's get to what gets you to your best self. Think about it, the mindset, in whatever way works for you. It's all about not having a fixed mindset. I am not worthy. All right, we work on that. But that's more therapy, the really working through where that comes from, right? Mm-hmm. And the coaching is taking what we've got and saying, okay, if we can work with it, let's take this on the road. How can you have a growth mindset? So that's absolutely the case with kind of this self-care idea.
I'm guessing you're a fan of gratitude too. I'm just suspecting that that's a piece of it. Yeah. You feel more generous. I mean, I think that, there was something on NPR yesterday. AJ Jacobs, who's a writer you may know about, he's the editor-in-chief of Esquire, and talked about this, how gratitude sets you up to be open, to be generous, not to feel the sense of scarcity. So you're more sharing, you're more likely to come in open, as you describe it, and with the growth mindset.
There's research behind it, first of all. So it's not just our opinions. You and I probably live by this and have our opinions, but there was a book by Sonia Lyubomirsky some years ago, The How of Happiness. And it's a great book. I think there are 12 different ways to garner happiness. And one of them is gratitude practice. And she's a social psychologist, scientist, and collects data on this. So it is absolutely the case. And another way to kind of get at that is to think, we all know people who financially have tremendous means, but are stingy of spirit, I'll call it. And you think, what is that about? And then typically we all know someone who has so little that you don't want them. I can think of one friend who continues to get gifts for me. And I keep saying, please, let's share some time together. Let's take a hike and go for coffee. But she doesn't have very much, but she has a generosity of spirit and a resilience and joy that many of these other people don't have.
Even that being comes through, could be through horrible tragedy.
That's right.
So remarkable. Back to mindset.
Yes. So mindset really is the foundation. And mindset happens when we're rested, when we have the right fuel, when we then don't stress ourselves about having a purpose that is so important, we're going to change the world. We start with our little p purposes. There's a method to my madness, as I say. And it does take the complexity, because it can be overwhelming, to simplify it in ways we can use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've certainly been successful. You're hanging out with the most influential people who study aging, and I saw Chip Conley and all these people. So it sounds like you really have brought so much wisdom. Where can people find out more about your work and take this quiz that you mentioned earlier?
Thank you for asking. So my work as an executive coach and life stage transition coach, I do that. I speak. In fact, you mentioned Chip Conley. Mm-hmm. We just put on the website, I think. I'm going to be leading a 5-day mastery workshop in Baja, April 17th to 21st, called Consciously Curating Your Life.
Oh my gosh.
And I use the arts and beauty as a metaphor. Because oftentimes people think, oh, I'll get to that when I'm on vacation, going to a museum. That feeds and fuels us as well. So I use that. So that is available. And I do have some scholarships. So people can look at that. My website is my name, BarbaraWaxman.com. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you put that in the show notes, how to spell it, but it's pretty easy.
Yeah, I will.
And I have lots of free things. I have a report I wrote called The Future of Resilient Leadership. I have this thriving quiz. My passion and purpose is to make the world a better place by enabling people to know themselves and be able to have the joy and impact they want. So I give a lot away.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me.
I feel like we could be talking until tomorrow morning, probably. There's so much. Yeah, we have kind of complementary skills, I would say. You know,
very much so.
You as a coach and me as a psychotherapist, and how both of those, you need a plan. And it's lovely to find out why you're feeling the way you are. But at the end of the day, you need to know what to do this afternoon to start working on changing. So I'm pretty practical in my approach after we get to some of the deeper roots. So such a pleasure,
great,
Barbara Waxman, and continued success. And I would encourage our listeners to check out BarbaraWaxman.com. And thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us on Zestful Aging. If you like the podcast, please share it with some of your friends. If you think decluttering could help you feel better and you could use a little assistance with that, check out the online course I've developed with professional organizer and designer Carrie Luteran. It's called Too Much Stuff. And too much stuff is different from other courses or articles or guidance you may have used up. We give you clear steps to deal with the clutter and the tools to help you face the overwhelming feelings and the emotions that come up when we're going through our clutter. And a lot of those emotions are just feeling anxious or guilty or just basically flooded with a lot of different confusing feelings. The course is really practical. It's realistic. The lessons are short and punchy, and they're really manageable. We're not trying to set you up for some long, exploratory, you know, super in-depth, burdensome experience. We want something really helpful for you right now. We all need help with our anxiety. So, being surrounded by more calm and less chaos can really help. So now's a good time to clear out the clutter so we can focus on what's really important in our lives. So find out more at zestfulaging.com. You'll see more about this under the web courses tab. If you have any questions, just shoot me an email at zestfulaging@gmail.com. Thanks so much. And stay tuned next week for another interview with a fascinating and inspiring guest.